Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, Baby, It's Cold Outside. We'll learn about wintering horses, keeping cats safe in cold weather, and which dogs were bred for the cold. And if you want to know how to teach a dog Yiddish, stay tuned because that's coming up too. We'll start with this from the Humane Society. They have some ways to protect pets this winter. They say follow these tips to keep animals safe and comfortable in the cold. In many areas, winter is a season of bitter cold and numbing wetness. Make sure your four-footed family members stay safe and warm by following these simple guidelines. Keep pets sheltered. Keep pets inside with you and your family. Under no circumstances should pet cats be left outdoors, even if they roam outside during other seasons. Dogs are happiest when taken out frequently for walks and exercise, but kept inside the rest of the time. Don't leave pets outdoors when the temperature drops. If your dog is outdoors much of the day for any reason, they must be protected by a dry, draft-free shelter that is large enough to allow them to move comfortably, but small enough to hold in body heat. The floor should be raised a few inches from the ground and covered with cedar shavings or straw. The doorway should be covered with waterproof burlap or heavy plastic. Pets who spend a lot of time outdoors need more food in the winter because keeping warm depletes energy. Routinely check your pet's water dish to make certain the water is fresh and unfrozen. Use plastic food and water bowls. When the temperature is low, your pet's tongue can stick and freeze to metal. Bundle up. Wipe down. No matter what the temperature is, wind chill can threaten a pet's life. Exposed skin on noses, ears, and paw pads are at risk for frostbite and hypothermia during extreme cold snaps. For this reason, short-haired dogs often feel more comfortable wearing a sweater, even during short walks. Rock salt and other chemicals used to melt snow and ice can irritate the pads of your pet's feet. Wipe all paws with a damp towel before your pet licks them and irritates their mouth. Remove common poisons. Antifreeze is a deadly poison, but it has a sweet taste that may attract animals and children. Wipe up any antifreeze spills immediately and keep it, like all household chemicals, out of reach. Coolants and antifreeze made with propylene glycol are less toxic to pets, wildlife, and family. Dogs are at particular risk of salt poisoning in winter due to the rock salt used in many areas, often when licking it from their paws after a walk. Store de-icing salt in a safe place and wipe your dog's paws even after short walks. If your dog ingests rock salt, call a veterinarian immediately. Protect outdoor animals. If there are outdoor cats, either owned pets or common community cats in your area, remember that they need protection from the elements as well as food and water. Cars are one of the many hazards to small animals. Warm engines in parked cars attract cats and small wildlife who may crawl up under the hood. To avoid injuring any hidden animals, bang on your car's hood to scare them away before starting your engine. You can find the complete article with even more ways to protect pets in the winter by visiting the Humane Society's website at humanesociety.org. And here's a post by Amanda Boutet, lifestyle contributor and horse enthusiast at Pet Health Network. Wintering with horses. Just as the summer months bring fly spray, bathing, sunscreen, and heat protection, the winter months bring their own special care requirements for our horses. Fortunately, preparing for winter can be an easy task as long as you plan ahead. Blanketing. Most people assume that horses need to be blanketed in the winter. In fact, horses are extremely good at regulating their body temperature. That long winter coat that you have been grooming to perfection is, in fact, a fantastic insulator. However, please note that a horse that has been clipped, old, sick, thin or not provided shelter away from the elements should be provided the extra warmth and protection of a winter weatherproof blanket. Always make sure blankets are fitted properly to avoid your horse getting blanket rubs or tangles. Water. Just like in the summer months, fresh water should always be available to your horse, and it's important to remember that snow does not count as a water source. Horses are also more likely to drink warm water over ice-cold water, so having a water heater is something to look into before the winter months arrive. Otherwise, be prepared to break ice in frozen water buckets in stalls and out in the pasture. Feed. Your horse's digestive system is very important when it comes to keeping him warm in the winter months. During digestion, microbial fermentation happens, which produces heat. What fuels this process, you ask? Hay. Hay has a very high fiber content, which causes it to be digested slower than grain. This longer process of digestion results in keeping your horse's internal heater warm for a much longer period of time. An increase in grain in the winter months can be beneficial as well. High fat grains, beet pulp, oils, and corn will help increase the fat intake of your horse, therefore adding weight and body fat. Grooming. Your horse's winter hair is very important when it comes to staying warm. This means you are responsible for keeping that fuzzy horse of yours clean from debris, sweat, and dead hair. Your grooming routine from summer months should stay the same, but make sure to pay extra attention to any scratches, lumps, or bumps that could be hidden in your horse's long hair. If your horse is wearing a blanket, make sure you remove it regularly to check your horse's coat condition. And shoeing. During the winter months, it is important to discuss with your farrier the best option for your horse when it comes to horse shoes. Whether your horse goes barefoot, has shoes with borium, shoes just on front, or all around, always make sure the surface you are working in is free from ice. If you have any concerns or questions, you should always visit or call your veterinarian. They are your best resource to ensure the health and well-being of your pets. And from Cornell University Veterinary Hospital, cold weather tips for cats. As winter arrives in the Northern Hemisphere, temperatures drop, and just like for humans, the lifestyle of cats change. Cold weather can have a negative impact on the well-being of cats in a number of ways, but luckily there are steps that you can take to mitigate these effects. Winter impacts cats that spend any appreciable amount of time outside the most, and the combination of low temperatures, wind, and snow and ice can predispose cats to hypothermia and frostbite. The best way to avoid these problems is to keep cats indoors at all times. For those cats that cannot be kept indoors, it is important to provide shelter from the cold, wind, and precipitation by either providing access to purpose-built shelters or to indoor environments with adequate bedding. Straw is a good choice. Avoid newspaper, cloth, and hay, and provide food and water. Measures should be taken to prevent the water from freezing, i.e. solar water heater, using thick plastic bowls rather than shallow ceramic bowls, and if possible, the shelter should be raised off the ground to avoid body heat loss into the ground. It's also important to realize that cats burn more calories to stay warm in the winter, so feeding them a bit more than during the warm weather months will help them avoid losing weight. Another issue to consider is automotive hazards that cold weather may expose cats to. Since car engines generate heat and outdoor cats are constantly seeking warmth, cats can be injured when they seek warmth in the wheel wells and or engine compartment of cars, and owners unknowingly start their cars and drive away. It's a good idea to check the wheel wells of your car and to either honk your horn or bang on the hood of your vehicle before starting it, to prompt any cats that may be seeking shelter in the engine compartment to leave. Finally, winterizing cars with antifreeze places cats at risk because antifreeze is extremely toxic to cats if ingested, and its taste is attractive to cats. To minimize this risk, be sure to keep all antifreeze well contained and out of reach of cats and to clean up any antifreeze spills and leaks promptly. By taking these steps, you can help cats experience a better quality of life during the cold weather. And from Lynn M. Hainer, 5 dog breeds that welcome winter. What other dogs besides the famous snow-loving St. Bernard welcome colder temperatures? Let's talk to 5 winter dogs who cheer when it's cold, written in the first person as if the dogs were doing the talking. Siberian Husky. I'm one of the breeds most rightfully associated when people think of winter dogs. I was bred thousands of years ago in southeastern Siberia by the Chukchi people to tolerate the coldest winters. We showed great endurance, pulling sleds long distances on the smallest possible food intake. No one wants a sled dog that fills the sled with his own food. I was also developed for adaptability and gentleness. I slept with children, keeping my family warm on 3 dog nights. Cheerful and ready for adventure, I love to dig, run, pull sleds, hike, and play in snow. You might want to keep your backyard fence high. I was born to run a wintry trail. I love you, but I'll likely choose adventure if a door swings open. Next is the Black Russian Terrier. We're the Black Pearl of Russia, developed to guard people and places. The USSR bred us specifically as winter dogs to endure its severe cold season. Of course, some areas in my vast country are warmer than others, but in general, our winters are cold, dark, and snowy indeed. Our impressive big beards, one of our trademarks, along with our black double coats, keep us warm. We're calm, confident, and courageous, and always ready for outdoor adventure. Grab your cross-country skis and a long line, and let's try skioring together. The Chesapeake Bay Retriever. I'm a fan of snow, as well as icy cold weather. My history starts with 2, probably Newfoundland puppies, Sailor and Canton, rescued from a ship off the Maryland shores. Bred with Spaniels and hounds, we developed into dynamic, robust water retrievers capable of working in Chesapeake Bay's cold waters. With great strength and an intense work drive, my forefathers could retrieve up to 100 birds a day. My coat is wonderfully suited to snow play and work. The oil in my coat and my woolly undercoat shields my skin from cold water or snow. And here's a bonus. When you bring us indoors, we'll dry quickly. But don't get too comfortable in front of your fire. We recharge quickly and will soon ask to go back outdoors. The Chinook. We were developed in New Hampshire by Arthur Walden, a sled dog driver. Walden specifically bred for a sled dog with speed and stamina, but also a tender disposition, particularly around children. He sought to merge the power of dog breeds that hauled cargo with the quickness of smaller racing sled dogs. Chinook, the father of my breed, became Walden's most trusted lead dog. Chinook and some of my other early ancestors provided vital transportation for Admiral Byrd's Antarctica expedition. Today, we enthusiastically anticipate the first snow of the season. Have you heard of kick sledding? Or how about a snowshoe trek? You'll need snowshoes, but my paws are at home on frosty terrain. And finally, the Lhasa Apso. Sometimes called a bark lion sentinel dog, my ancestors were developed in Tibet as indoor guard dogs. We watched over monasteries and beckoned assistance from the Tibetan mastiffs when needed. But despite our primary indoor roles, we were also developed to tolerate chilly winter walks. Tibet, after all, is the land of snows. Fancy yet altogether functional. I'm cloaked in protective beauty. Now, make no mistake, regardless of my warm coat, I need to live indoors and with my family. but I'll enjoy a long winter walk and won't shirk from snow play. Snow can, however, accumulate between my paw pads, so I'll need some extra care when I come in from the cold. Loving these gorgeous winter dogs? These breeds are particularly active and a good fit for owners and families who can put in the time to play and interact with them. As always, do your research on breeds and breed mixes and consider your lifestyle before you adopt or choose to parent any dog. We hear a lot about the importance of neutering and spaying our dogs and cats, but what about our bunnies? Well, bunnies are a little different from cats and dogs. They have some specialized needs of their own. In their article, Rabbit Neutering or Spaying, Best Friends Animal Society explains. The reason for spay-neuter surgery is obvious if you have both a male and a female rabbit. Remember the old cliche about breeding like rabbits? Why should you spay or neuter your bunny if you have only one, or if you have several of the same sex? Reasons to spay or neuter a bunny. There are several very good reasons. First, studies indicate that a high percentage of unspayed female rabbits will get uterine and or ovarian cancer between 2 and 5 years of age. And a very high rate of males will get testicular cancer. So, spaying or neutering your rabbit will help give her or him a potential lifespan of 8 to 12 or more years. Second, upon reaching sexual maturity, rabbits often display such undesirable behaviors as spraying, chewing, and fighting with other rabbits, as well as becoming aggressive toward people. Spaying or neutering greatly reduces and, in many cases, eliminates these behaviors. At what age should a rabbit be spayed or neutered? The best time to spay or neuter rabbits is just as soon as they reach sexual maturity, which can be as young as 3 months in dwarf rabbits. Be sure to double-check your rabbit's sex beforehand. Most young rabbits can be spayed between 3 and 6 months. Is a rabbit ever too old to be spayed or neutered? The answer to this question really depends upon the general health of the bunny in conjunction with the bunny's age. A younger rabbit with significant medical problems may be more of an aesthetic risk than an older rabbit who's healthy, although all anesthesia poses some risk. Discussing your rabbit's individual health history with your veterinarian is the best way to make a decision about whether your rabbit can undergo the procedure. Choosing a veterinarian. It is extremely important to make sure that your vet is knowledgeable about the spay-neuter procedure and experience with both the procedure and rabbits in general. A rabbit neuter or spay surgery can be dangerous or even life-threatening if improper technique is used. If the rabbit is older, tests may need to be done to assess liver and kidney function prior to surgery. Please question the vet carefully about his or her experience with rabbits before you take your bunny in for surgery. The House Rabbit Society keeps a list of experienced rabbit vets, and you can visit the House Rabbit Society and their list at rabbit.org. Cost of spay-neuter surgery for bunnies. The cost to perform spay or neuter on a bunny is quite variable, but it does tend to be slightly higher than the cost for a dog or cat, since the surgery is a bit more specialized. Check with your veterinarian or your local humane society to determine what the cost will be. You can also contact any rabbit rescue group in your area to see if they have additional information or can help defray the cost. About the sterilization surgery. Contrary to the procedure with other animals, food and water should not be withheld from a rabbit the evening before surgery. If the veterinary office staff directs you to withhold food, discuss the request with your vet. Generally, the reason that food is withheld from cats and dogs is the possibility of vomiting during surgery. But rabbits cannot throw up, so vomiting is not a danger with them. In fact, withholding food and water is harmful to rabbits and can result in longer recovery time from surgery. The actual surgery involves removal of the ovaries and double uterus in a female and removal of the testes in a male. All large blood vessels are carefully tied off with suture to prevent bleeding, and the incision is closed in layers with buried suture to prevent chewing after recovery. During anesthesia and surgery, it is important to maintain the bunny's body temperature. Heating pads, warm IV fluids, warmed or humidified aesthetic gases, and radiant heat are common and effective methods. Plastic bubble wrap for warmth, insulation, and soft bedding is also used. Recovery after the procedure. To assist with the recovery process, as soon as the rabbit wakens from surgery, he or she should be encouraged to eat. Offer the bunny a variety of his or her favorite fresh foods. Any rabbit who's not eating soon after surgery may need to have some help with feeding, such as syringe feeding, unless there is a medical reason to avoid this. If all goes well, your bunny will start to perk up, noticeably by the second day after surgery. Healing begins quickly. Adhesions, normal tissue repair, usually start to form within 24 hours of surgery in rabbits. Recovery time will depend on the type of surgery, the surgeon's technique, and any complications. In the case of spay neuter, a male will usually recover more quickly since a neuter is less invasive than a spay. A male is usually ready for normal activity within a few days of surgery. A female might take a bit longer to recover from her spay surgery. Postoperative pain relief will also help your bunny recuperate faster, as pain can be a cause of postoperative gastrointestinal tract issues. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, are easy to administer and well-tolerated by most rabbits. Other medications, such as opiates, can also be used, and although it is often suggested that these drugs can affect gastrointestinal motility, this is uncommon when an animal is truly in pain. Your veterinarian will advise you about which pain medication to use and what dose to give your bunny. And now, the part that everybody's been waiting for. Teaching your dog Yiddish. This was posted in the New York Times by Alex Strauss. In Central Park, teaching dogs to sit in Yiddish. The humans gathered for coffee and chocolate rugelach at the check-in table near the 67th Street and 5th Avenue entrance of Central Park. The dogs sampled homemade apple cookies, or kechel, and sipped water. Owners were encouraged to take training treats to keep in their pockets. By 10:30 a.m., 7 participants and their owners were ready. Well, as ready as dogs could be to learn Yiddish. The class was organized by Workman's Circle, a progressive Jewish community and education nonprofit. People want to teach their dog Yiddish, said David Dasik, the event manager at the Circle. It's a New York thing to do. Steve Zellman, 69, from Sutton Place, Manhattan, was there with Ali, his long-haired miniature Dachshund, to meet some nice Jewish dogs, he said. Edna Schwartz, also 69, came in from Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, with Puma, her miniature poodle, for the training aspect. My family would yell at us in Yiddish, so this reminds me of my childhood, she said. My dog is here to learn how to behave, listen, and respond. Some came to reconnect with their roots while tricking their children into learning a new language. My dog may not care, but it's a sneaky way for my son to hear a little Yiddish, admitted Maury Tamarin, 62, who came in from Larchmont with her son Abe, husband Ron, and their Tibetan Spaniel Toby. This was the first time the Circle had offered a dog education class. Tickets were $10. A similar event was planned for that October. The idea was Ann Tobeck's, executive director of the Circle, whose overly excited golden doodle, Jesse, was busy jumping on guests. I'm always looking for fun programs that will engage people around our heritage, she said. New Yorkers love their dogs. This was a great way to integrate the two. The first exercise was the loose leash walk. Everyone stood in a straight line, then they walked to and around Miguel Rodriguez, a certified master dog trainer, and returned to their starting spot. Then came the commands, first in English, then in Yiddish. Zitz, or sit, shouted Mr. Rodriguez. When you give a dog a command, you want to overpronounce the first and last letter in each word, said Mr. Rodriguez. You can hear the Z and the T are very strong. Dogs take well to tones, not vocabulary. Dogs won't memorize words, he explained, but they will remember the sounds of them. Sometimes they take to Yiddish words better than English. The next 30 minutes were spent learning and then following additional commands. Arop, or down. Stay, for stay. Gut, or good. Nein, for no. Kum, for come. And Baicho, treat. Group classes can be hard, Mr. Rodriguez said. At home, there are minimal distractions. In the park, there are birds and squirrels and treats. Not everyone came with a pet. Jana Golden, 68, who said she is presently dogless, sat off to the side in a chair she had brought from home as if she were attending a sporting event. Toward the end of class, many people had broken away from the group to practice their own. People seemed pleased with their dog's progress. Bonnie Winkleman, 62, was cavelling or gushing over her Lhasa Apso, Einstein. This was great practice. He learned better eye contact, she said. I'll be using the words and practicing with him at home. Amanda Devins, 67, had come all the way from Eureka, California with Rafi, her Bichon Frise. They were here visiting family. I'm having such a good time, she said. Last year I went to Yiddish Land Camp with the circle, and I couldn't bring him, she said, referring to Rafi. Now I get to do two things I love. After taking a group photo, everyone milled about kibitzing or giving unwanted advice rather than kvetching or complaining. Gift bags were dispersed and an old form of communication had been honored. This is an affirmation of culture and life, Ms. Devins said. It's another positive way of being Jewish and bringing back a dying language. I had no one to speak it to. Now I can speak it to my dog. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks for listening. Excuse me. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.